WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're going to get back out to the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I have a feeling this guy, I'm going to be able to bring him back from whatever hill he's on in Tempe or whatever lake he's on in Minnesota or his homestead now in the middle of Ohio where they're still playing football this weekend. Brian Billick is our partner on behalf of the Living Classrooms Foundation, and I don't want to say I forgot about you. I just sort of leave you alone because you're grandkidding, and I see this as ski season for you. You know, I don't see you turning up on the NFL Network too much. You and I haven't talked in a couple of weeks, and I'm moving, Coach. So, I mean, I have things happening and cats and wives and clients and radio and all this stuff. And my client, Leonard Raskin, texts me in the middle of the day. Jen and I are out picking out a beam for our new thing, and it's Billick to ASU. And I'm like, huh? And I'm like, did he replace Marvin? I hope Marvin's still there. You know, how are you? How's life, brother?
It's great, man. I mean, it's been good. Like you said, all that you said, all the above. I was early in the month. I was down to coach the Hula Bowl. Mike Smith, my brother-in-law, wrangled me into being, he was the head of the one team. I was the head coach of the other, put together a hell of a staff. I had Wade Phillips was my defensive coordinator. Mike Tice was my line coach. Kevin Sumlin, the old Texas A&M and Arizona coach, was my wide receiver coach. Mike had Carnell Lake was my DB coach. It was great getting the guys together. It was fun being around the college kids. It was group. And this was a group, the Hula Bowl is a group. They moved it to Orlando and these are
Hold on a second here. You said Hula Bowl. I figured the first benefit is that's in Hawaii. Why wouldn't you do that? Right. The Hula Bowl is not in Hawaii anymore.
Because of COVID and logistics, they moved it to Orlando. And I think it's going to stay there. It was great. We centered at UCF. Great setup down there. Beautiful school. 73,000 students at UCF. I had no idea. Great setup. Beautiful facility. Weather was great. Played a lot of golf and got to be around the kids. And simultaneously with that, just prior to it, Ray Anderson, who's the AD at Arizona State, my old agent, was my agent, Marvin's agent, ended up going to the league office, been the AD at Arizona State for about 7 years now, 5 years now, I guess.
And he's an interesting cat because he worked on both sides of the league, kind of Andrew Brain. Oh, yeah. He worked for players and coaches and then worked for the league, right? So he's done everything.
Yeah, Ray's brilliant and is doing a great job at Arizona State. And I've known Herm for 40 years. And, you know, they brought, as you know, they brought Marvin in, you know, to kind of oversee and be a general counsel, so to speak, on the defensive side. And Ray reached out to me, see if I'd be interested in doing doing that with the offensive side. I thought, well, Ray, you know, I'm kind of setting what I'm doing. And he kept coming back. And it just got to be more and more interesting. The Hula Bowl kind of prompted me a little bit and being around the players. And I've known Herm for, like I said, for 40 years. Marvin's there. Donnie Henderson is there off my staff. So it just made sense. I'm excited about what they're doing. I'm going to go in and help them kind of reformulate what they're doing on the offensive side, kind of do what Marvin did for the defense and be around a little bit and looking forward to it.
When's the last time, other than when you left here unceremoniously, 13, 14 years, however many years it's been, you coached football players? When's the last time, not at a camp, I mean, maybe even a camp, but how often are you physically Coach Billick in that football setting since 2008?
The week with the Hula Bowl kids was the first time since I left the Ravens. You know, now, notwithstanding, I did coach my 9-year-old grandson's tackle football team. Was great. My son-in-law runs the league and they had some issue with the coach. Said, Pop, you got to come in here and take this team over. Okay. So I went in. It was great. They were great. And you know, it's a little bit different because it's like, okay, where's your helmet? Are your shoes tied? You know,
do you have the patience for that?
Well, it was tested. I got to tell you a story. One kid comes up and goes, you were the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. I go, yes, sir. You're right. He goes, and you won a Super Bowl. I go, right again. You know your stuff. He says, that's really cool because most of those guys are dead. So I'm thinking, I don't know if he thinks I'm Vince Lombardi or what. Well, there's a few of us still hanging around here.
All right. So Arizona State and look, I went out with Marvin before the plague or during the plague, actually. I was at his house. And we sat around, talked about it. I'm shocked, but I'm not shocked because when it happened, I said I literally was out at Wise Markets with my wife and we were literally shopping. And I said to her, I'm like, you know, You're a nomad to some degree because you've moved around in coaching and you're out with the grandkids. And it's like the Godfather that you're once a coach, even if it's 9-year-old kids. I said to my wife, I do radio. It's what I stopped doing it for a while. And it's like what I do. And 30 years into it, I do it for free. I do it for a million. They'll tell anybody to do it for free. But it's what, when it's what you do and you haven't done it in so long, it calls back to you. Does it not?
It does, particularly in the college environment. You know, I love what they're doing down there. And again, kind of going back with guys that I know and I trust, and with Herm and Ray and Marvin and Donnie's there. And we're going to, you know, I'm anxious to get down there. And all I'm going to bring to it is kind of an outside perspective to, I've always said, you know, the 12 years I spent doing games for Fox and then the NFL Network really did broaden. I always said, if I were to go back into coaching, I'd be better because of this experience. Because particularly for 6 years with Fox, think about it. Every Friday, I'm sitting in a different facility in the NFL and watching practice, many coaches, sitting in meetings, that kind of thing. And it gave me a unique perspective on the game. And then getting ready for the draft for the NFL Network obviously drew me into the college game, looking at the talent and what they're doing. And again, you're unattached to a team. So you kind of develop a broader view of it. And so that's what I'm going to bring to ASU, maybe a broader view, to what they're doing. You know, me, structure, process, the teaching sequence, game planning sequence, as much as that as anything, and working with the coaches to help them redefine the platform that highlights the player's ability.
Yeah. And not to be too introspective on all this, but 14 years later, I don't know that I ever thought you were going to coach the Jets or the Vikings or the Chiefs or like go do that or ever take Notre Dame's job or, but I thought the broadcasting thing, I thought you might do that forever. And I know pay, travel, weekends, grandkids, yeah, all of that stuff. But that was a groove for you. And now that we've lost John Madden, now that we've seen how great Tony Romo is at this, right? And maybe how not great Jason Witten was or Booger McFarland. There are players and people that did it that sort of fizzled on it. But you were one that excelled at it. And I just thought that was going to be what you did instead of coaching, to go back to coaching. It's never a straight line, is it? You know, no, what you think you're going to do and what you wind up doing later on as life unfolds.
It was a nice niche. I enjoyed it. And it kind of kept me involved, gave me the latitude to do the other things that I want to do. I'm done with the NFL Network as of last July. So with all the transitions going on, and it was time. It was time for, you know, obviously them reformatting some things. And you know, the niche that I had was kind of run its course, which was good. I was on with that. And then, so this last season, I'm, you know, kind of totally unattached.
Well, you did some stuff for the Ravens. I saw you show up for Ravens.
Yeah, I did, which was great fun. Matt Brevet did a great job of, and kind of, so that drew me back into watching the Ravens games a little bit, and then would do my thing on Monday and Tuesday, just kind of, well, here's what happened. This was kind of interesting. Still did some radio stuff. So I was kind of, you know, out there and working on my golf game.
That's the most shocking thing. If anybody really knows you, to I'm think obsessed. That you, dude, I've golfed with you. No. It was awkward. And I can't believe that you started golfing.
Obsessed with it. And it's great. I give, you know, to get out.
When did that turn?
I have some friends, there's some beautiful golf courses up in Minnesota, just gorgeous mountain courses. And I had some buddies were playing. So we were members of Scioto Country Club here in Columbus. So I got some coaching. The pro kind of took.
Did you ever turn the corner to think you could be decent at it? Because I mean, your whole thing was F this. You know, it's like I'm not even going to start this. Is where you began with it.
I can see now because this is all I do. I mean, I love it, and I spend a lot of time with it. If you're working, I don't know how you play golf and get better at it. I understand you playing golf, but you're not going to get better because you got to spend some time. It's great. I'm on the green in regulation in most instances, but then I can five putt any green in America. I am the worst putter in America. It's like, it's embarrassing.
Well, you didn't go to Ocean City when you were a kid and play putt-putt like I did. That's the strength of my game, the putt-putt.
And that's the approach I probably need to take. So it's been great fun. And Kim's playing, so that's great fun. And I think there's a few golf courses down in Arizona, so I may do a little of that.
You're getting better is what you're saying. You're improving.
A little bit. I'm not as embarrassing as I used to be.
Well, that's a Billick trademark here. Coach Billick joining us here. You can follow him out on Twitter. And, of course, helping out things with Living Classrooms here on behalf of us at WNST. And Baltimore Positive from Ohio to the desert. Let's go back. Let's talk some football here. Let's start with the Ravens because I mean, we talked about how great the games were last weekend. And I think I'm going to the Super Bowl next week. I masked up 12 hours a day. We're going to figure all that out. for the Ravens in this offseason, and look, we go back to you and your departure from the Ravens all these years. Six losses in a row for John. We know how he is. We know how the organization is. We know where Eric is. This is a tough thing for the organization to work through, six losses in a row and the disappointment of 8-3. I understand it as a media member. I understand it as a fan. I understand it as a former PSL owner, that when you lose all your secondary, you lose your running backs, your left tackle doesn't show up, you lose your cornerbacks, you can't win. I'm not offended as a fan. I'm not angry, but I was a little shocked at a 6 p.m. departure for Wink on Friday, and that there's going to be some level of upheaval as Lamar gets his 20 million and then his 40 million.
It sounds familiar, doesn't it? It's like my last year. You lose your quarterback, you lose your tackle, you lose your secondary, you lose the, but it happens. And I've always said, and it was true when I was there, and John's living it now, an organization is a living, breathing entity. And it goes through transformation. And the thing with Wink did surprise me a little bit, but not really, because it's an inflection point. Obviously, usually any team in the NFL, you lose your quarterback the way they lost Lamar, you're going to pay a price. And clearly, that was part of the difference, them going down the stretch here to not make the playoffs. So you can't just dismiss that and say, but nor can you just say, well, that was the only reason. And you do go through a shelf life. And sometimes change has to happen just for change. That doesn't feel good. It doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem fair. But that's very real. And that's likely what they're going through now.
Well, you always said time for pay and time for play. It's time for pay right now. And if Wink's not going to be here next year and you're 1 year dangling, a lot of jobs, Brian. I mean, there's jobs. I'm surprised they haven't called you, Marvin, everybody, you know, like everybody's getting called. There's a lot of movement. And in that, as you know, you get sucked to Arizona State because of a relationship with Ray and Marvin and people you want to be with at this point in your life. I would think the same thing is true for any of these coordinators at this point in their life who have millions of dollars in the bank. It's not, coordinators aren't making 100 grand and having to figure out, like you coming from Minnesota 30 years ago. Everybody's got a little bit of money and a little bit of security to say, I want a good situation and I want to live where I want to live, golf where I want to golf, coach players I want to coach, but go into an office every day with people I like. And this is the time of the year where you find that for the next, hopefully, 3 to 5 years, if you're a coach, and that's the best you could hope for, right?
Yeah. And I think what we're the trend right now is to, I've said for a while, it's a GM's league right now. It really is. That's where the power is. And you get so there's been turnover GMs as well, which is different than before. Before it was just fire the coach and we're fine. But now, because they now have the power and it is a GM's league, now they're being held responsible more. And so you're seeing more turnover in the GM position. So what you're typically getting is the GM, whether it's a new GM or existing GM, they're going to try to partner with a relationship, someone, you know, normally, you know, the young guys are the vogue things right now. If you've had lunch with Sean McVay, you're going to get a head coaching job. But, you know, kind of from that, they're looking for that kind of thing. The young coach, the innovative, match him with the general manager. The coach is like, look, you just be the offensive and defensive genius. Don't worry about personnel. Don't worry about cap. You just go coach. We'll shove the meals under the door and you do your game planning stuff. And we'll and piecing it together that way. Not all of them. And when you go away from that, in the model right now, when you look at the guys, at some of the guys, I'm going to say older guys, not necessarily like me, but that have been around the league a long time, that hasn't necessarily gone well. So I think looking for the young guy is kind of, now it also, there's aberrations to it. I mean, you typically, you hire the opposite of what you just fired, right? So if I had a young guy, and I'm going to look for more veteran guy. If I had a veteran guy, now I'm going to look for a young guy. Offense. If I had an offensive guy, I went in defensive guy. But a defensive, although they still tend to look for the offensive guys. So yeah, it is, and it's beginning to get more and more. I remember in the NBA, Larry Bird for a while made it very clear. He says, "Hey, if a guy hasn't gotten done in 3 years, I'm getting rid of him because it's never going to happen." Now that seems like a short time frame, but in the NBA, maybe possibly. But I think there is a bit of a okay. We're going to make this change. You look at Cully down in Houston, and you know that's a quick hook to go. Okay, after all that they had gone through, and said, "No, you know this isn't the right direction." They're making those kind of decisions. What's interesting is those organizations tend to keep making the same mistake.
Well, that comes to ownership. Yeah. I mean, that's really where that is. And for John, and we talk a lot about you around here behind your back, and you don't know, you know, especially this time of year, right? You were a guy, and this is fascinating because of the general manager thing. You didn't really know Ozzy, and Ozzy didn't know you, and you were married by David and Art, and you didn't know Marvin at all, and Marvin thought he was going to be working for George Seifert or Gunther. I've talked about this in the last 2 weeks, and you're like, well, I want a guy I don't know. I want to be challenged. I want to MF each other in a back room and come out with one strategy. John hires friends. John hires people he already knows, people in the circle. There's a whole different level of what you're comfortable with in hiring, in meeting new people and trusting new people on other recommendations. But you were very, very, you always made like a Brunswick stew, a little of this, a little of that.
Yeah, because I think, and you think about, in fact, Marvin and I were visiting about it. You know, Ozzy, Denny Green, God rest his soul, was such a mentor of mine. And he had told me all along, you and Ozzy will work great together, because he knew Ozzy and I didn't. And I trusted Denny's perspective. But Marvin, it was interesting. Marvin's the only one I kept. And I remember being down the Senior Bowl, and I played, we had played Baltimore, and I really respected what Marvin had done on a, you know, kind of a bad team. So I thought, well, I need to, and I knew about Marvin. I thought, I need to talk to him. So he comes up to my suite at the Senior Bowl and had unquestionably the worst interview in the history of interviews. When we were done, and Marvin and I were like, I not only did not want to hire Marvin, I never wanted to see the son of a bitch again. Because he was depressed, he was down, whatever. And I thought, I can't get him out of here quicker. And then I realized, okay, that's probably not right. He it was an emotional time, and it just happened. I need to.
He probably thought it was like not a real interview, right? I mean,
it
at that
not
time,
have. I don't know, but he clearly was. And we know Marvin can be emotional, you know, and like we all can. So we reconvened, and it was better, obviously. But and I give Marvin great credit for it. That staff I put together for him, that I threw on him. You talk about coming with a group, Rex Ryan, Jack Del Rio, Mike Smith, Donnie Henderson, Steve. Those are some strong personalities. So to have to come into a room as a coordinator with a group you've never worked with before and have to manage these guys who every day, and you know, when you come into a new job, you sit down, you look at the film, and you basically sit there going, well, I don't know why they did that. That was stupid. I can see why they got fired over that. Well, for Marvin to have to sit and listen to that for the first 2 or 3 months, you know, and kind of going, well, we kind of thought it was a good idea at the time, but he handled it brilliantly. He took the input. He adapted to kind of the format that I wanted, to mainly the teaching sequence. He was going to obviously run the defense, but in terms of the way it's installed and practiced and game planned, and he adapted and was brilliant at it. So again, thrown into a new environment that challenged him, but made him a better coach.
Brian Billick is our guest. He's Coach Billick out on Twitter. He is headed to the desert. He's on to Tempe to join up with Marvin. Marvin gave me an ASU hat. My cousin played tennis at Arizona, so it's a little down the middle. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Suggs fan, but I did love Todd Heap. And I did spend time with Coach Kush up on the roof many years ago when I was doing that book 15 years ago. So the Arizona State thing, for you and Marvin getting together at this point, because you're telling old stories that are 25 years old now about how bad the interview was and all that. Man, you both got rings in all of this, right? Like it's an amazing thing 25 years later for you and to see the two of you in ASU, to see you in the same room wearing ASU stuff. It's gonna be a little freaky deaky for a dude like me.
Nah, it'll be it's great. And Marvin was a big reason why I took the job too, because I also knew that in the role that he has on the defensive side, what I'm doing on the offensive side, which again is an overall perspective to help the coaches be more structured and organized and platform the players' abilities. And the fact that Marvin and I come from the same school, so to speak, and have, you know, and obviously the time we spent together, and Marvin's been very complimentary about going forward, how he implemented many of the basic structural and process things that we did in Baltimore. He took that on to Cincinnati and was very successful. So we come from the same background, the same perspective. So I think we're going to bring a unified perspective to a group of young players, and to help Herm, who's great with the players, keep a consistent structure to show them, look, this is the process, and this is how you win with this process. There's talent here. Everybody has talent. Everybody in college football is kind of doing the same thing. The same in pro football. You know, you're kind of doing the same thing. You're doing it with different players, with different levels of ability, which is clearly the key, but there's no magic defenses or runs or protections or routes out there. It's about the process of how do you conceive, teach, and communicate, then implement what it is you're doing. And Marvin and I will have a shared view on that and maybe be able to help them move towards that.
Well, you've been such a historian, you know, with Walsh and different kinds of offenses and how the game is played. Clearly, the college games greatly affected the NFL game this century. Like, yeah. The NFL has taken on the college game more than the other way around.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Because even though the trappings of it are a little bit different, a little more spread out and some of the no huddle and the gun, because I'm just now delving into the numbers. And it's been a while, you know, I was 12 years in the college game at San Diego State, Utah State, and Stanford, but that was a millennial ago. But when you talk about process, the practice structure, the number of plays you run, how you run, the number of times you're in a given situation really hasn't changed all that much. So even though it looks a little bit different and the style is a little bit different, the process of how many times you're going to be in the open field and base down, how many third and one. I always love it. My running line when I talk to new coaches is, you know, I look at their game plans and in the open field, they have a, you know, in third and one to two, and they have 20 plays. And I always ask them in a regular game throughout the season, how many times are you in a third and one to two in the open field? The answer is average once, maybe two as an outlier. So you really need 20 plays?
How about one that works?
Well, right. And so you leave yourself the options in terms of you narrow that focus, because my question is always, how do you get all that taught? If you have that much offense for a third and short, how much do you have in the other? And a lot of coaches, I learned a long time from Tony Dungy and Ted Marchabrota taught me this as well, was a lot of guys offensively anyway, just call plays. They're just calling plays. They're not really focused on the nuances of first down to start a series versus first down earned. Second long, did you get second long because of an incompletion or because of a stuffed run? After an explosive, was it after an explosive run, the play that you're going to call, or after an explosive pass? Because defenses will make different calls based on that, and you need to be focused on that, narrow your focus as to what you're calling. And it's that type of thing that I think I should be able to bring to the table to help the offensive coaches fine tune what it is they're doing, how they're communicating it, how they're teaching it, and then how they're orchestrating it on game day.
Coach Billick is headed to Arizona State. You can still follow him out on Twitter and around here at WNST and Baltimore Positive from time to time. All right. We've been at this a while and talking about you. Okay. There's a hell of a football game this weekend. Wow. I mean, that
great
was something.
Plan. All I've always said, you know, we've been doing this a while. Division round's the best round, best weekend of football in all of the NFL. And this one didn't, I mean, three-point games, some great, and the Kansas City Buffalo game was just stunning, just to watch the level of play and these great quarterbacks. And I said going in, I was excited about the playoff picture this year because I didn't think there was a clear-cut team. There were a couple teams that probably shouldn't have been there, Philly and Pittsburgh. You know, those last seeds, you're getting, you know, it's tough enough. You can sixth seed, but you throw in now the seventh and
it's becoming hockey. They're just going to let everybody in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Which is okay. But to handicap, and as we saw, the number one seeds both lost. So even with that, you could make a case for any of those teams to go on and win a Super Bowl. And you can make an equal case to say, well, this is why they're going to stumble and this is why it's not going to happen. I think we saw that played out over the weekend. Just phenomenal games to watch the Rams go on, you know, West Coast to East Coast. What was it? 2 or 20 and stuff like that, where West Coast teams going to the East Coast had not fared well in the playoffs. And Tampa Bay and run up a 27-3 lead. But it's Tom Brady. And you never, you know, and to watch that come back, but then to respond once they did come back and answer the call, you know, it was fabulous for to see the Rams do that. Disappointing to see Green Bay go out, but San Francisco, that's their formula. Keep Garoppolo to 20-25 throws, run the ball, play good defense, and they can win. And now they're playing the Rams. Kansas City and Cincinnati, I would not sit still on Cincinnati. Joe Burrow has been nothing less than spectacular over the last five games of the season. I mean, he had 1,000 yards against all total against Baltimore, and then what was it, Kansas City or Pittsburgh? I mean, it was unbelievable. So this
you had that old term with him is makeup. It was just makeup, right? That's a 70s, 80s, you know, that's a Gil Brandt term or whatever. Boy, he's you just watch the way he conducts himself, just in general, and you're like, root for him, and he's a Bengal,
And I'm in Columbus, so obviously there's a bunch of Bengal fans here, and they're all excited with the Houdat. But Joe Burrow, there's a calm about his process, about his demeanor, that is belied by his youth. He looks Brady-esque. He looks Aaron Rodgers-esque in the way he and has obviously the physical skills, and they're wrapping some good talent around him. So, but Kansas City and Mahomes, I mean, I personally, and he's a good guy, but Leslie Frazier ought to be shot. You cannot play man. I don't care if it's two man against Kansas City. You cannot do it. First off, your guy can't run with Kelsey. He's going to get overpiled by Kelsey, or he's going to be outrun by Tariq Hill. And two, you're opening it up for Mahomes to pull it down and run. Now, you can't. So the answer is, if we play passive zone, they just nickel and dime down the field. Yes, they do. And with 13 seconds, make them nickel and dime down the field. You don't give them two plays of 70 yards by going any kind of man. That just stunned me.
Brian Billick is here. You can follow all of his travels to Arizona State out of Coach Billick. And last thing for you, Super Bowl in L.A., hometown, and coming back. And have you been to SoFi yet? Because I haven't been out yet. And
Network.
You know Radio Row, right? I mean, it's people, elbows, celebrities. I don't know how we're going to do this with a mask, but there's a part of me that I want to go out and just see it this way, because we all skipped it last year. But this is a different thing. And I don't know, sad for humanity and our citizenry, and certainly for LA, and trying to show the thing off, that I'm a little half-hearted about going out there next week.
Well, it's going to be interesting. The network now has its new building literally attached or across the street from SoFi. So there'll be a lot there, I'm sure, that they'll set up. It'll be a spectacular facility. And it's going to host a great Super Bowl. It's funny. I spent two-week period of time. I spent 4 days in San Antonio. Coach's convention was there, played a little golf, did a speaking gig, then went to Orlando, spent a week with 100 players coming in from all over.
Young people.
I was in Texas and in Florida. Okay. Now I'm vaccinated. Had all three jabs. Okay. I'm good. Tried to be good with the mask, but I promise you, in Texas and Florida, they ain't wearing masks. It's open season. And just went on about it, and it seemed to work, you know. And I told my wife, I said, after what I've been through that 2 week period, if I don't catch COVID, then I must be immune, because I was around a lot of people doing a lot of things. So I think that bodes well for it.
We're also outside though, too, right?
I know California is going to be a little bit different. They have a different perspective on it, and I'm sure they're going to do all the right protocols. I think it'll be spectacular out there, and it's going to be a great venue for it.
Sure, glad I'm going. Good. All right, good. I'm going to represent WNST Baltimore. Head coach Brian Billick joining us here. Now, what's your offensive analyst of the what is the official title?
Special assistant to the head coach offense, multiple hashed hyphened name. So
I just want to get that Arizona State media guide, even though they don't make it anymore and it's online, to sort of see the whole list of coaches. Well,
you know what's amazing? Oh, that's amazing, because I have to fill out all the number of forms that you have to fill out to be employed by a state university. Oh my God. It's like, you could get into the Pentagon or the NSA easier than you can get employed by a state university. It's unbelievable.
Just follow the rules. And I know that's, you know, you used to be a guy that made the rules. Now you got to follow the rules. Head Coach Billick here on behalf of the Living Classrooms Foundation. Hoping to get you back to Baltimore for a crab cake at some point this year. Man, the crab cake tour, greatest idea ever. Sitting and having crab cakes, drinking beer and iced tea with people all over the state. I had such a beautiful summer doing that.
Tuesday night, Marvin and Peggy are coming over for dinner with some friends that I've got in Arizona. And I've ordered up crab cakes from Friedley's. We're off and running. Fradley's, right. It's going to be great.
You ordered from Fradley's. Well, I'm gonna call down to Damie and make sure she throws some mac and cheese in there for Marvin and for Peggy. All right,
be perfect.
Head Coach Brian Billick, you see the Super Bowl trophy behind him. He is still our partner here at WNST on behalf of the Living Classrooms Foundation, where we have important things happening with safe streets down in the city and just a very, very rough week around here this week. So prayers out to everybody in the La Scala family and obviously the firefighters. But we're going to continue to talk some football around here as well as some Baltimore positive. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.